There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots, independent media, and our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman. I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, public access television. What is it? And also, what's going on with public access in Urbana? We'll be talking to Greg Bazell, who is on the Urbana Public TV Commission, in addition to working in public access TV in Chicago at the Chicago Access Network. And we'll also get you up to date later in the show with what has happened at the FCC this week, because they sure did a lot. All on today's Media Geek. Stay tuned. Well, hello, and I hope on the line we should have Greg Bazell.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and how are you?
I'm fine. I'm first-time caller and a long-time listener.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for joining us.
So sure.
You are very involved in public access TV. You work as the technology director, is that correct?
That's correct.
At the Chicago Access Network.
Uh-huh.
And then you're also on the Urbana Public TV Commission, which
that's
oversees
correct.
The public access channel run by the city of Urbana.
That's right.
Well, maybe for people who are not familiar with public access TV, you could tell us a little bit about what it is.
Well, what public access television is essentially it's an institution that affords citizens the opportunity to participate in television as speakers. Prior to its development, the only way we really participated in television was as viewers and consumers and eyeballs, but public access affords us the opportunity to participate and be heard.
And so what does that mean, to participate and be heard? Does that mean you actually get to be on television?
Absolutely. You can be on TV. You can submit pre-produced tapes by someone else. Most access facilities, including CanTV in Chicago and UPTV here in Urbana, also offer training. So if you don't have the skills, you can acquire those and also provide production facilities so that if you don't own equipment, the station will provide that for you so that you can get on the air.
And how long has public access TV been around as a service?
Really started in the U.S. in the 1970s and was sort of an outgrowth of the free speech movement here. The idea being that when cable television started gaining a foothold, activists really pushed for the idea that if we're going to multiply the number of channels, the scarcity argument that used to exist prohibiting people from participating in broadcasts, that scarcity argument doesn't hold up anymore. There's enough channels that the community can have a channel or channels as well. For instance, in Chicago, we manage five different stations, and they're all used by the public and nonprofit agencies.
Now, you have five different stations in Chicago. Is that mm-hmm. because there are five different cable companies?
No. It's just, actually, we have access to 10% of channel capacity, so arguably we could be operating 20 if we had the resources. But actually, there are five public access channels, and then the municipality, the city of Chicago, runs two on its own as well.
Wow. And so, but here in Champaign-Urbana, we just have the one.
Correct. And that is, I don't say it's peculiar, but it is a difference, that this is a mixed station, and that it's both public education and governmental. It's a shared channel.
Does every cable system or every city have a public access channel?
No. Unfortunately not. The way that this works is that when a cable company comes to a town, it has to apply for a franchise. And what that franchise is really granting that cable operator the opportunity to exploit a public right-of-way by laying cables and sell cable service and make a profit. The idea of cable access is that, okay, if you're going to use this public right-of-way for profit, you're going to have to give something back to the community. And what it gives back in return are these access channels and facilities. And really, I think that's a model that should be more widely adopted. I'd like to see a time when broadcasters were having to provide similar paybacks in return for using public airwaves, for instance.
And there is some protection for this under federal regulations, if I'm not incorrect. The FCC requires that this be provided if cities want it or something like that?
Well, a real visionary back in the 70s, Nicholas Johnson, was able to push a rule through that actually required public access. Well, that was challenged over time, although a lot of access centers got their start back then. And what the courts ruled is that the FCC had really overstepped its boundaries. However, public access was memorialized in law in the 1986 Cable Act, and what it provides for is that cities can require channels, and they can require some funding as well.
Okay. So some of the funding for these channels comes out of the cable fees?
In fact, all of it does.
All of it does.
Pretty much. I mean, once in a while you'll have stations writing grants for special projects, that sort of thing. But, you know, primarily it's coming out of cable fees. One interesting thing is, the cable companies, for instance, have suggested that if access didn't exist, that cable bills would be lower because they wouldn't have to pay for this. Well, one, the amount of money provided to access is just insignificant compared to the gross revenues that these companies are drawing in. And two, they charge what the market will bear, so the cost of access really has no relationship to the cable bill that subscribers are paying. So if you ever hear that, just dismiss it because it's nonsense.
So up in Chicago, the Chicago Access Network, you have a pretty large operation as public access television goes.
Yeah, we do. I mean, there are larger centers. Manhattan is larger. There's a number of them that are bigger. I mean, when you think about it, we're supposed to be serving 2.8 million people. So, I mean, prior to my involvement 15 years ago when the station was first set up, there were discussions about setting up 5 centers throughout the city that were all equal to the size of the one we're operating now. So the vision was diminished significantly when reality set in. But there's no lack of demand or need. We conduct bi-monthly orientation sessions for the public that are still full to the brim with maybe 80 or 90 people attending each session. And these are brand new folks. So at any one time, we've probably got 400 or 500 active individuals at that station, and probably another 300 or 400 active nonprofit agencies using the station as well. So it's a pretty lively place.
And all of these people can learn to use video production equipment and produce their own programs.
That's correct. And what we've also done is develop services for nonprofit agencies to simplify that process to some degree so that, you've made video, and it can be a fairly time- and skill-intensive process. Mm-hmm. We've simplified some services to make it easier for nonprofit agencies to be heard as well.
Now, does this come at a cost to the people who are broadcasting?
There are, for instance, a nonprofit who participates pays $50 a year for a membership, and there's an individual equipment use fee that I think is $65 a year. Not insignificant, but again, when you compare it to the value of what they're receiving, I think it's a pretty good deal.
So in addition to this, you've then also been serving on the Urbana Public TV Commission here in Champaign-Urbana.
That's correct. I was appointed in January of this year.
Okay, and so how did you come to get involved down here? Do you live in the area?
Yeah. I'm a UPTV member.
Okay.
And the cable ordinance calls for one member of the cable commission to be from the membership ranks of UPTV. So my name was put forward, and I was willing to participate, and so the mayor appointed me.
Okay, and so why did you want to get onto the commission here?
Well, this is it's kind of interesting having one foot in central Illinois and another in Chicago, but this is really a lively community. To some degree, I see the Access Center as being somewhat underutilized, and I think I have ideas and ways of helping energize the station a bit more. For instance, WEFT, I think, is just kind of an amazing resource. Certainly, we don't have a community radio broadcaster in the Chicago area, but here in East Central Illinois, we've got that. Well, I want to see UPTV grow and become as vibrant as, for instance, WEFT is.
And so what is the role of the commission with regard to the running of the UPTV?
It's essentially a policy-making board. I mean, really, I see our role as creating policies and procedures to make it as simple as possible for people to participate. Our job is really to facilitate speech and to figure out ways of simplifying that process, to get people in, to make them aware of what this is, and you know, reflect the community as best we can on that channel.
I'd like to remind everyone, you're listening to Media Geek, and we're talking to Greg Bozell, who is on the commission which oversees Urbana Public TV, which is public access TV in Champaign-Urbana. As well, he is the technology director for Chicago Access Network, which is public access TV in Chicago. We are talking about public access TV both here and in Chicago. And so the day-to-day operations at Urbana Public TV, are they supervised by somebody?
Yeah. The management form here in Urbana is this is a municipally managed access facility. For instance, in Chicago, CanTV is a 501c3 nonprofit, so we are a separate independent entity. Some access facilities are managed by the cable operator themselves, but here in Urbana, it's the city of Urbana that manages that, and we have a UPTV coordinator. His name's Chris Foster, and he oversees the station.
Okay, now, this is pretty unique, the way Urbana runs it, in that it's this mixed system between being both sort of a city channel and a public access channel.
Yeah, it could be a little tricky, there's no doubt about it.
And I guess that recently that's sort of come up as an issue because of some programming which some Urbana residents would like to bring on to UPTV, a program called Democracy Now!
That's correct, yeah.
And so I guess, you know, it's something I've been trying to figure out, because I've been studying, you know, lots of elements of telecommunications law for a long time, trying to figure out how it goes. But this is a case in which a resident, Randall Cotton, came forward and wanted to ask UPTV to carry this program, which is available on Free Speech TV,
uh-huh,
which is a public access network, and by satellite,
yeah,
and brought it to the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And so when... In your view, as just a single commissioner, what do you think about airing this kind of program, a daily one-hour news program that comes from outside of Urbana on public access TV?
Well, as a commissioner, I think all we really need to be looking at are the rules, okay?
Okay.
Again, I see our role as facilitating speech, so what we need to figure out how to do is essentially how to accommodate requests for channel time unless they fall outside the content restrictions that do exist on public access. And there are two. One is commercialism, which Democracy Now! Clearly is not a commercial program, and the other is obscenity, and clearly it's not that either. What makes this a little bit tricky is that the way that Democracy Now! Is delivered is via satellite, and what would be required is adding a satellite dish to the roof of the city building in Urbana in order to receive the program. I'd say it's a little tricky, but it's hardly daunting. On the other hand, what's great is that Randall Cotton, who is the citizen who came presenting this idea and this request, has raised the money, so he's willing to pay for the dish, willing to pay for the subscription fee, pay for the installation. So there will be no cost to the city of Urbana to install or maintain this dish. So to my mind, it's like, okay, so what's the problem? You know?
Okay, but apparently there is, because according to reports I've read both in the Public Eye, which is the IMC's newspaper, mm-hmm, and as reported on the IMC's radio news program, both Commissioner Kevin Maxson and Mayor Todd Sarathwaite disagreed with carrying this on public access TV.
Well, yeah, I would say that's generally true. I mean, it's difficult to get your hands around exactly what it is they're opposing specifically, because not a whole lot was stated, but clearly there was delay going on. I would also say that Randall's made us well aware that this issue has been before the city of Urbana since March of this year. And frankly, I'm a little bit embarrassed that it's taking this long to deal with this and get it on the air. This is not exactly an efficient way of dealing with a request that really isn't that complicated. Yeah, I think there's some resistance. I mean, one thing that the mayor did state is he believed that it set a precedent that was troubling, and I personally disagree with that. There's already a dish on the roof of the Urbana City building that receives the Annenberg channel, believe in that case, the city actually paid for the dish. So there was actually money expenditure that went into to getting that. I may be wrong on that, but I don't think I am. I believe they paid for it. In this case, there's no financial expenditure at all.
And the Annenberg Channel, if I'm not incorrect, doesn't cost any money to subscribe to, but
no.
In general, it's a sort of a public interest kind of channel. It has programming about the First Amendment.
Educational programming. So, you know, it's fine. I think it's fine. But, you know, it's on several days or several hours a day, and I think, you know, there's not an issue of channel capacity in this case either. I think we've got plenty of room. And the other thing is that Democracy Now! Is transmitted live. I believe it's either at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, so this is not a high-demand time. It's not like Randall's saying we need to be on prime time 5 days a week. This is a time when nothing else may be on anyway. So, again, what's the holdup, you know?
And is this... Would Chicago Access Network, do you think, carry something like Democracy Now! If there were a similar movement there in Chicago?
Well, currently we're in discussions about how to accommodate it. It's a little bit different in Chicago for two reasons. One is that we're really at a different stage of development in terms of building those channels. To be blunt, we're pretty much full in terms of programming and almost in need of activating another channel. Again, not to say that we're not discussing it and trying to figure out a way to accommodate it. The other problem is that CanTV's funding is under siege right now, and I mean, I could go into that in detail if you're interested, or people can just check out CanTV.org to learn all about how a cable company is trying to put the screws through the public access station there. But because of our uncertain funding future, we're very resistant to add any new services when we may have to drop them 2 months later because we're laying off six or seven people from the staff.
So in principle, probably not a problem so much as it is a practical problem that of channel capacity and possibly funding then to have that channel capacity.
Well put.
Yeah. But I do understand that Democracy Now! Is carried on other public access TV stations around the country.
It's on 108 stations around the country. So
wow.
This is not UPTV will not be at the vanguard in carrying. It's pretty common. It's carried on some PBS stations. Obviously, WEF broadcasted. I mean, this is... You know, it's hardly controversial programming.
But what I read is that the initially there seemed to be a vote of 5-1 in favor to go ahead with Democracy Now. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, come again?
Initially there was a 5-1 vote on the commission to go ahead with Democracy Now.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get my head around that vote, too, because
yeah.
It seemed like it was done, and then one commissioner interrupted and said, wait a minute, I don't want to discuss this. Now, I was later told, and I think rightly so, that that vote wasn't conducted correctly because after motions are made and seconded, you're supposed to ask for discussion. Well, no request was made for that. They just held the vote, and, you know, we had a right to discuss it. So that commissioner was right on calling the chair on that. And after further discussion, I guess the position right now is... and this particular commissioner, I forget his name, said that he didn't want to enter into a knee-jerk reaction, which I thought was a little bit odd, because, as I said, this has been going on since March of this year. But what they want to do is review all the satellite programming that might be available free to UPTV and then pick whichever programs are deemed appropriate. This is a really tricky part within all this, because the issue is really... and what we were voting on at that time is the city going to select this as part of what it plays, as part of what it telecasts? My view is I want to move it into the realm of public access, so there's no discussion of content at all, because I'm frankly uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should, you know, I want to encourage content, I want to encourage, you know, constructive participation in the channel, but I'm not, you know, the whole notion of public access is that the public decides what's on by who comes there and uses the place. So what I'd like to do, and what I'm actively pursuing, is collecting rules from other access centers who do play Democracy Now! And have made rule adjustments that make that kind of programming possible without singling it out to pick it as, you know, we've written this rule for this program. No, we've written this rule for this type of program, so if people come with this request, we can deal with it in a fair way, and it has an opportunity to be telecast.
And when will you be taking up this issue again on the commission?
The September meeting, and I don't have the date in front of me, but it's okay. On the city's website.
I think it may be September 13th, does that sound correct?
That sounds right.
Is this a meeting open to the public?
Absolutely. Come on down.
Okay, and they're held on the city building in downtown Urbana?
Yeah, and it'll probably be in council chambers if we have the kind of attendance that I expect. I mean, you know, again, to Randall's credit, he presented a petition with well over 500 signatures, and that was back in June, so he's probably got 800 or 900 by now. There's a lot of, and again, I'm not sure that this should play into our decision if we were treating this really in kind of a content-neutral way, but clearly there's public support for this and public interest in this, and they want to see it. So, again, I don't want to really blow it out of proportion, but it seems like that kind of concerted interest where there's many residents that want it on, and at the same time there's no financial cost to the city. I don't see where the challenge is here. This seems pretty easy to me.
I do want to note that we did ask Mayor Sathwaite to appear in the program today, and his secretary or someone responded that
he was out of town this week. Yeah,
so he could not appear here to sort of bring on that other perspective. And finally, as we wrap up here, Greg, if you just tell us how people can get involved with Urbana Public TV, maybe get their own shows and get on the air.
Oh, sure. Well, you give Chris Foster a call, and of course, I don't have his phone number sitting in front of me here, but he, the city of Urbana, you just call the number there and ask for the cable coordinator, and we're quite happy to schedule training. He's quite flexible in that, and anything we can do to get people involved, we're all for it. And certainly we will be holding some kind of open house sessions as well to try to just acquaint people with what the possibilities are. We're introducing some new services hopefully this year that are going to make it easier even to produce programming and get it on the channel. We're in the process right now of building a small live call-in studio. So literally, you can just go in, sit, pretty much like the studio you're sitting in. You go in, sit down, push a button, and bang, you're on the air. But you have the ability to take phone calls as well, so you can create interaction with the audience. Not the laborious process of producing a tape. And plus, it's live, so you can deal with very timely issues. I've provided a lot of consulting on this because we have a studio like that in Chicago, and I'm very excited about getting that off the ground.
Well, it's great. That's really exciting. I mean, I'm personally glad to hear it, and I'm hoping maybe the Urbana-Champaign IMC video group can take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
As well as lots of other people in Urbana-Champaign.
Absolutely.
Once again, Greg, thanks a lot for talking to us, and we hope to talk to you in the future.
All right. A big shout-out to my little boy, Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
All right.
You are listening to Media Geek. We'll be back in just a moment with some news about what went on this week at the FCC. Do stay tuned. And you are listening to Media Geek, and of course you can check us out online at www.mediageek.org, where you can listen to archive editions of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format, as well as check out news that we don't have time to get to on the program here. Always a growing amount. And of course, send your comments to me, Paul, at mediageek.org. Well, it has been a busy week at the Federal Communications Commission. On Wednesday, August 4th, the FCC held an open meeting where it tackled several broadcast media and telecom issues. In addition, the commission released decisions related to media ownership and localism. At its open meeting, the commission adopted an order that implements several steps to accelerate the conversion of the nation's television broadcast system from analog technology to digital. Amongst the steps is a firm deadline for digital stations to increase their power levels to serve additional viewers in fringe reception areas or lose interference protection from other stations in those areas. The commission also approved 13 content protection technologies under its new broadcast flag rules for digital television. The TV broadcast flag allows a broadcaster to send a signal that prevents a program from being recorded or copied by the viewer. One of the content technologies approved by the FCC is a controversial proposal by TiVo that would allow consumers to view recorded programs to be shared between any of 9 compatible devices that are registered with TiVo. This feature is controversial because the entertainment industry would like to prevent as much sharing of program content as possible, while consumers and consumer electronics manufacturers have an interest in the ability to share recorded content. Advocates for allowing greater fair use sharing of creative works are suspicious of the FCC's role in approving technologies for controlling and protecting copyrighted works, since this is an area otherwise under the supervision of Congress and the U.S. Copyright Office. The FCC's broadcast flag creates another arena where the entertainment industry can lobby for tighter controls over copyrighted works, even controls that prevent uses that are permissible and legal under copyright law.
Also, in its open meaning, the FCC voted 5-0 that law enforcement agencies should be able to tap internet-based phone calls made using voice-over IP technology. In this decision, the Commission decided that internet phone call providers are subject to the 1994 Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, which ensures that law enforcers will be able to keep up with changing communications technologies. Some telecommunications industry executives have maintained that, although they support efforts of law enforcement, new rules could be both too expensive and too difficult to apply to the new technology. The United States Telecom Association, which represents the nation's largest telephone companies, said earlier this year that the ruling requested by law enforcement officials might impede technological progress and impose unreasonable costs on carriers and consumers. At the commission's meeting, FCC Chairman Powell said, quote, "Our tentative conclusion, while correct, is expressly limited to the requirements of the statute and does not indicate a willingness on my part to find that voice-over IP services are telecommunications services," end quote. By not considering voice-over IP service to be telecommunications, in effect, the FCC accepts voice-over IP from laws, regulations, and taxes that apply to conventional telephone and other telecommunications services.
And earlier in the week, the FCC tackled an aspect of media ownership rules with an eye towards tightening a loophole. On August 2nd, the Commission released a proposed rulemaking that may ban in some markets a common type of operating agreement between TV station owners. Under this type of agreement, known as a joint sales contract, two or more separately owned TV stations sell their advertising cooperatively, often as a package. In effect, this allows the stations to be managed more like they had one common owner, generally allowing the joint stations to undercut the ad pricing at competing stations. The FCC said it has, quote, "tentatively concluded," end quote, that joint sales contracts allow one station of outsized influence over a small market's ad prices, sales forces, and station's right to reject advertising. Under a new proposed rule, two stations in the same market would be considered commonly owned when they enter into a joint sales agreement. This would mean that in markets with fewer than 8 separately owned stations, joint sales agreements could be effectively banned because co-owned stations or duopolies are forbidden in markets that small. Last summer, the FCC voted that joint radio sales agreements between same market stations would be considered duopolies. The tighter rule could be implemented within 6 months after a round of public comment.
Finally, back on July 1, 2004, the FCC initiated a proceeding seeking comment from the public on how broadcasters are serving the interests and needs of their communities, whether the Commission needs to adopt new policies, practices, or rules designed to promote localism in broadcast television and radio, and what these policies, practices, or rules should be. After receiving 3 requests to extend the comment period for the proceeding, on August 3rd, the Commission set new due dates. Interestingly, one of the 3 requests was filed by the Illini Media Company, which owns the local Daily Illini newspaper and radio station WPGU-FM. The others were submitted by the National Association of Broadcasters and the Media Access Project. The new date for filing comments on this issue is extended until November 1, 2004, and the date for reply comments is extended until December 1, 2004.
And that's what went on in our media environment this week, and just a little bit of it. What went on at the FCC.
That brings us to the close of another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media and our media environment. In the meantime, you can catch up with independent media news at the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org. There you can also download and listen to the archive editions of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. Media Geek is produced live at the studios of Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek's producer is Drew Tirico, and I'm Paul Riesmandel. The Media Geek radio show is free to rebroadcast by non-commercial stations for non-profit purposes. Please contact us for permission to excerpt. Email me at paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.